Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 3.
Fascinating material about Monkey King, Sun Wukong.
Yes, the Monkey King.
And what really grabbed me from the start was this idea that it all kind of kicks off with something so basic.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
He just wants better weapons for his monkey tribe. That's it.
Right after he's dealt with that demon, the Hunshi Moong, I think it was, comes back to Flowerfruit Mountain, big hero.
Exactly. But then reality hits, sticks and stones.
Yeah.
Well, they aren't going to cut it against, serious threats.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's the one who stops and thinks, wait a minute.
Yeah. Suddenly sitting quietly, he has this thought.
He's worried about this playing turning serious, maybe provoking human kings or even other sort of supernatural masters.
Right, Corey, he's considering multiple potential threats, not just one.
And he looks at their current kit, bamboo poles and wooden knives, and asks basically, how are we supposed to fight with this? And how did the others react when the leader voiced his concerns?
They got it immediately. They were all alarmed. They basically said, "Your Majesty sees very far, your insight is great, but we don't know where to get these things." So we're digging into something with some real history here.
Definitely. And even that first very practical problem, needing weapons, it escalates fast.
It really does. His monkeys actually make a good point. They need proper metal weapons.
Sensible monkeys.
Their suggestion: pop over to the nearby Aelai Kingdom. It's, what, 200 miles east? See what they can find there.
Okay, sounds logical. Almost mundane, really.
But Wukong, well, he's not exactly your average shopper, is he?
Not even close. He does think about buying them for like a segment.
Right, a very conventional idea.
But then, nope. He decides, I've got powers. Why not use them? And that immediately tells you everything you need to know about him.
Oh, absolutely. What follows is just chaos.
Yeah.
Chaotic is the perfect word.
How so?
He conjures up this massive windstorm. I mean, the text describes flying sand, stones, animals terrified, trees uprooted. It's not just a little breeze.
Wow. Okay, serious magic.
And then, this is the really wild part, he plucks hairs from his body,
Huh?
chews them up, spits them out, and bam, they turn into hundreds of tiny little monkey clones.
Okay, that's audacious.
Yeah.
What's the mission for these mini monkeys?
One thing: loot the Aeolite Kingdom's armory. Empty it completely.
Good grief. It's not just the magic, is it? It's the sheer scale.
Yeah.
And just zero concern for the humans living there.
Exactly. This isn't some surgical strike. It's a full-on smash and grab. Imagine the panic in that city.
Yeah, it really shows his willingness to just use overwhelming force, ignore the rules, even for something relatively simple like getting swords. A key insight, like you said.
Picture it, this swarm of tiny monkeys, each one dragging multiple weapons, swords, spears, axes, everything back out.
And Wukong just gathers them all up with more magic.
Yep. Another magical whoosh, and he's back on Flowerfruit Mountain with his mini army and all the loot. The arrival must have been quite a scene.
I bet. Aw, maybe some confusion for the regular monkeys, but the result is clear. Flowerfruit Mountain is now armed to the teeth.
And this act, the sort of power move, it doesn't go unnoticed, right? It has ripples.
Definitely. Word gets out pretty quick about this newly armed monkey kingdom.
And suddenly, all sorts of creatures start showing up: wolves, tigers, leopards. Even like 72 demon kings in total.
72. Wow, they're coming to pay homage.
Yeah, they recognize Wukong's power. They bring tribute, help fortify the mountain. It goes from just being a home to, well, a proper stronghold.
That rapid alliance building, it really shows how quickly he establishes dominance, doesn't it? He defeated the previous demon, created a power vacuum, and boom, his show of force fills it. He's a natural leader, even if his methods are unorthodox.
Unorthodox is putting it mildly. But even with all these earthly weapons and these new powerful allies, Wukong himself isn't quite satisfied.
Yeah, what's wrong now?
His own weapon, apparently a big knife he got from the raid, it just isn't.
Well, it isn't him. He needs something more, something extraordinary.
He needs a signature weapon.
Exactly. And that's when the older monkeys pipe up again. They seem surprisingly knowledgeable.
What do they suggest?
Try the Dragon King of the Eastern Sea. Ask him for a weapon.
The Dragon King. Okay, that is an escalation. We're moving from earthly kingdoms to mythical underwater realms now.
Big time. And they even mention this detail about an underwater passage right there under the Iron Plate Bridge on the mountain.
That's fascinating. It hints at this hidden connection, doesn't it, between the mountain and this deeper magical world. So down Wukong goes, parts the waters with some spell.
Naturally.
And his arrival at the Dragon Palace is just peak Wukong. No knocking, no waiting.
He just strolls in.
Pretty much announces himself as the Dragon King's neighbor.
Neighbor.
Ugh.
The sheer nerve. It's not just audacity, though. It's him deliberately saying, I'm on your level, maybe higher.
Totally. The Dragon King, Ao Guang, he must have been startled, but he plays it cool, cautiously polite.
What does he offer first?
Tries to appease him, offers a big saber, weighs 3,600 pounds.
Okay, that's hefty.
Wukong, too light. Hmm. Then a 9-pronged fork, 7,200 pounds.
Double weight.
Same reaction. Too light. It just floors you how strong he is. Imagine being the Dragon King right then.
Yeah, you'd be getting pretty nervous. I mean, these are serious weapons for anyone else. Wukong just dismissing them. It shows he's something completely different. The king's probably thinking, what have I got myself into?
Right. So the Dragon King is basically, look, that's it, pal. Nothing heavier.
But that's not the end of it.
Nope. Crucial moment. The Dragon Queen and their daughter step in. They mention something. A divine iron that settled the river's depths.
Ooh, that sounds promising.
Legendary.
Exactly what Wukong wants to hear. What's the deal with this iron?
Well, it seems even the Dragon King might have forgotten about it or maybe didn't realize its potential. It's described as this pillar used way back by Yu the Great to, like, better the waters or calm the floods. Huge mythical weight behind it.
So it's not just metal, it's an artifact.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Tied to the very shaping of the world.
Wukong's got to see this. He goes, and this thing is massive, an iron pillar glowing.
And heavy, presumably.
Immensely. But Wukong just picks it up, tests it, and says, too big, too long, make it shorter and thinner.
It does it.
Incredibly, yes. It shrinks down, responds to his will, he asks for it even smaller, and it does it again. Clearly, this thing is special.
Wow. So it's like the weapon recognizes him. It's choosing him as much as he's choosing it. That adaptability. It matches Wukong himself.
And then he looks closer, sees these inscriptions. Gold bands appear. And the words, as you wish, gold-banded staff, 13,500 pounds.
As you wish, perfect name. 13,500 pounds.
Wow, he's found it. He's absolutely thrilled. And what does he immediately do?
Knowing Wukong? Probably test it out right there.
You got it. Starts swinging around the Dragon Palace, causing total mayhem, terrifies everyone.
Typical. Zero thought for collateral damage. He just wants to feel that power, right? Consequences later. You can picture the crabs and turtles scattering for cover.
Exactly. But is he done with the poor Dragon King? Oh, no.
What now? He got the ultimate weapon.
Now he needs an outfit to match. He actually says one guest shouldn't trouble two hosts, meaning since you gave me the weapon, you might as well give me some clothes, too.
You're kidding. The cheek, he's just pushing and pushing, isn't he?
Yeah.
His sense of entitlement is just growing by the second.
The Dragon King, of course, says, sorry, fresh out of fancy outfits. But Wukong's not buying it. He threatens to, you know, test his new staff some more.
A threat that definitely has teeth now.
So the cornered Dragon King gets clever. He uses this magic drum and bell to summon his brothers.
The other Dragon Kings.
Mm.
South, North, and West Seas.
That's them. Which kind of shows they have this network, right? A system for helping each other out when, say, an incredibly powerful monkey shows up demanding things.
Yeah, it's sort of draconic emergency hotline.
Yeah.
So they show up.
They do. They hear the story. One of them, the South Sea guy, is ready to fight at first.
Probably not wise.
That's what the old Dragon King tells him. Points out how dangerous that staff is. So plan B, pool their resources.
And give him some clothes.
Not just any clothes. We're talking cloud-stepping shoes.
Ooh, nice name.
Golden chainmail.
Sounds invulnerable.
And a phoenix wing purple gold crown.
Wow. They really decked him out. These aren't just clothes. They're symbols, right? Cloud-stepping, invincibility, royalty.
Yeah, it's like they're acknowledging his power, maybe hoping to appease him completely.
So, dressed to the nines, staff in hand, Wukong finally leaves.
Yep. Leaves behind four very unhappy Dragon Kings. His parting shot, a casual, sorry for the noise.
Oh, the disrespect. You can just feel them fuming. He basically robbed them blind and then added insult to injury.
Totally. And you just know this isn't over. Their decision to report him to the Jade Emperor. Totally understandable after that humiliation.
They have to. He's a menace with incredible power and zero respect for authority.
So back on Flower Fruit Mountain, Wukong makes his grand entrance, covered in golden light from the new gear, wielding the staff. His monkeys are just stunned.
I bet. He must look incredible.
And then, to really drive the point home, they try to lift the staff themselves.
And they can't budge it, right?
Not even close. Really shows how unique Wukong's power is. It must have totally cemented his leadership.
Absolutely. Visual proof he's way beyond them.
Then he shows off more, shrinks the staff down to a tiny needle, tucks it behind his ear.
What? Okay, that's just cool. The monkeys must have lost their minds.
They were amazed. But the real showstopper, he does this heaven and earth transformation.
What's that involve?
He grows and grows until he's immense, towering over the mountains, fills the sky. Those 72 demon kings who pledged allegiance, they're now flat on their faces, utterly terrified.
Whoa. Okay, that's not just showing off the weapon. That's raw magical power.
Yeah.
A clear message. Don't mess with me. It solidifies his dominance completely.
And just as fast, he shrinks back down, puts the needle staff back in his ear, and things seem to settle down for a bit.
A golden age for Flower Food Mountain.
Kind of seems like it. Lots of feasting, celebrating. He even makes his four oldest monkeys generals.
Getting organized.
And he starts traveling, making more alliances with other big-shot demon kings, like the Bull Demon King.
Expanding his influence. So he's not just resting on his laurels. He's building a network. Maybe thinking bigger picture?
Seems like it. Building a real power base. But, you know, this nice idyllic period, it doesn't last.
Uh-oh. What happens?
One day, after a big feast, he gets drunk, falls asleep under some pine trees.
A well-deserved nap.
Maybe. But while he's out, two figures show up. They've got chains, a summons.
Not good. Who are they?
Messengers from the underworld. They chain up his soul, not his body, his soul, and start dragging him off. They say his time's up.
His lifespan is over? But he's cultivated immortality, hasn't he?
That's what he thinks. Realizes he's being dragged into the gloomy underworld, and he is not happy.
I can imagine. But this is a huge moment, right? Confronting the whole system of life and death.
Exactly. It forces the issue.
Yeah.
And his reaction, pure Wukong, defiance.
What does he say?
He basically tells them off. Says he's already jumped out of the three realms, heaven, earth, underworld, and isn't bound by the five elements. He's beyond their rules. Immortal.
Wow. That's a statement. He's rejecting the fundamental order of the cosmos.
And he doesn't just talk. He acts. He pulls out his staff from his ear, remember?
Oh, boy. In the underworld.
Yep. And just beats those two poor messengers in a mush. Then he storms off towards the main city of the dead.
He's going to take on the whole underworld.
Looks like it. He storms right into the palace of the 10 kings of hell. Causes absolute panic. They're all scrambling like, who is this hairy-faced thunder god?
This is escalating way beyond the Dragon Kings now.
Yeah.
He's disrupting the actual afterlife. The 10 kings must be furious and probably terrified.
When he finally confronts them, he demands to see the register of life and death.
The official record.
The official record. And get this. While they're fetching it, he walks over to the main seat in the Hall of Yama, and sits down.
He takes the chief judge's seat. Oh, the nerve. That's pure dominance assertion right there. I'm in charge here now.
Totally. So they bring the registers. He looks through them. Notes monkeys aren't really classified like humans or birds or whatever. Finds his own entry. Sun Wukong, lifespan, 342 years. Died naturally.
342 years. Not bad, but not immortal.
Not good enough for Wukong. He grabs the brush and just crosses out his name.
Just strikes it off the list.
Strikes it off. And then, just for good measure, he goes through and crosses out the names of all the monkeys he can find in the registers.
What? So, in his mind, he just made his entire species immortal.
Seems to be the idea. Declares they're no longer under Yama's jurisdiction, throws down the book, and storms out of the underworld.
Leaving behind absolute chaos and 10 very panicked kings of hell. The long-term consequences of that, rewriting cosmic law, that's huge.
It's monumental. He's basically broken the cycle of life and death for his kind. The 10 kings have no choice now but to report this upstairs.
To the Jade Emperor.
You bet.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Wukong wakes up back on Flower Fruit Mountain like it was all a dream.
But it wasn't a dream.
Nope. He tells his monkeys what happened and they're ecstatic. Immortal monkeys, big party.
While up in heaven, the complaints are piling up.
First, the Dragon King files his report. Still furious.
Mm-hmm.
Details how Wukong forced him to give up the staff, the clothes, paints him as this incredibly dangerous, uncontrollable force.
That report alone would raise eyebrows in the celestial bureaucracy. A rogue element causing trouble.
But then comes the really serious one. The king of hell himself, Qin Guang Wang, shows up.
With backup.
With backup from the Bodhisattva Siddhigarbha.
Siddhigarbha. Wow. Okay. He's a major figure. Deeply connected to the underworld and souls. His involvement means this is serious on a spiritual level, too.
Absolutely.
a natural-born demon monkey hailing from the Water Curtain Cave of Flower Food Mountain, causing basically chaos down there, massively disrespecting the Ten Kings of Hell.
Violently resisted the Underworld's messengers when they came for him. He apparently forced his way into the records office and physically erased his own name from the registers of the dead. That's the accusation, struck his own name right off.
That's more than just skipping out on cosmic jury duty.
Framed as a fundamental violation. The monk uses this phrase, Po'o, which is about like the ordering of yin and yang.
Yin-yang balance.
Precisely. The balance of life and death, the whole natural cycle.
Yeah.
Sun Wukong doing this, it's seen as completely disrupting that essential order. It's not just rule breaking. It's like he's trying to break reality itself.
So this isn't just some bureaucratic complaint about improper forms. This is an existential threat.
He believes Sun Wukong's actions are shaking the very foundations of their cosmology. He's making a direct plea. He wants the celestial authorities to dispatch divine soldiers. The petition asks them to capture this demon, restore the balance of yin and yang, and bring permanent peace and stability back to the underworld. He wants this problem solved permanently. The Jade Emperor is now getting reports from the seas and the underworld about this one monkey.
So the Celestial Court is fully aware now. What's the Jade Emperor's reaction?
He's like, okay, who is this guy? Wants to know his origins, how he got so powerful.
Do they have answers?
Yep. The Thousand Mile Eye and Wind Accompanying Ear, these celestial intel officers basically report back. Stone monkey born from nature about 300 years ago somehow cultivated himself into this powerhouse.
So no official background, no celestial connections. He's a wild card, self-made.
Yeah.
That probably makes him seem even more unpredictable to them.
Exactly. And just as the emperor's thinking about sending armies down.
There's another suggestion.
A fascinating one. From the planet Venus, personified as this old wise star god, Tai Bai Jingxing.
What does Venus suggest? Not fighting?
No, the opposite. A peaceful approach, at least initially, offer Wukong a job.
A job in heaven.
Yeah. The logic is pretty smart, actually. Venus argues, look, he's powerful. He's achieved cultivation through natural means. Rather than fight him, why not try to bring him into the system? Offer him a title, give him something to do, keep an eye on him, co-opt him.
Integrate him to control him. It's a classic political move, isn't it?
Yeah.
Less messy than a war, potentially?
It shows a certain pragmatism in the Celestial Court. They're willing to try soft power first. If it doesn't work, then they can bring down the hammer.
Does the Jade Emperor go for it?
He does. He issues an imperial decree of amnesty, basically, a pardon and an invitation, and sends Venus himself down to Flower Fruit Mountain to deliver it.
How does Wukong react to a celestial job offer?
Surprisingly well. Venus is very polite, explains the emperor wants to offer him a position. And Wukong's actually quite enthusiastic. The idea of going up to heaven, seeing what it's like, he's totally up for it.
Really? After all that rebellion, maybe he wants recognition on a bigger stage.
Could be curiosity, too. He tells his monkeys to hold down the fort, behave themselves, maybe he'll even find them a place up there later, and just like that, he flies off with Venus towards the celestial realm.
Wow. So his eagerness is maybe a bit naive. Or ambitious.
Yeah.
Hard to tell. But it's a huge shift.
It really is. So we go from needing basic weapons.
Okay, that's a simple starting point.
To magical theft, shaking down dragon kings for legendary gear and fancy clothes.
Defying death itself, rewriting the underworld's books.
And ending up with a job offer from the Jade Emperor himself. It's just an incredible escalation. You really see his audacity, his power just bursting out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The speed of it all is amazing. It perfectly sets up this question of what happens next. His character, that blend of power, cunning, and total disregard for rules, is going to clash with heaven, surely.
Which leaves us with that big, intriguing question, doesn't it? What is someone like Sun Wukong going to do in the highly structured, very bureaucratic world of heaven?
Yeah. Can he fit in? Will they manage to tame that wildness?
Yeah.
Or is he just going to cause even more trouble up there?
His track record suggests maybe the latter. It seems unlikely he'll just quietly take orders.
It feels like a fundamental clash waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Untamed power versus established order. His past actions definitely hint at more conflict to come.
Well, this into just the start of his legendary journey, it definitely gives us a lot to chew on.
Yeah.
And it absolutely sets the stage for even bigger, crazier adventures ahead.